Welcome to The Detail. I'm your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. The views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR staff or volunteers. With me today is Martin Hyde. Martin is a candidate for state senate, right? You just jumped into the race.
Absolutely. We've done Congress, we've done city commission, come up empty-handed, so state senate this time.
Right. Well, a lot of politicians have run many times before they've ultimately won.
Lincoln did.
Yes. But I know I would be remiss. I know. I have to, you know, there are a lot of people who, let's talk about what I think is the elephant in the room for a lot of my listeners, right? So, you know, you were on video trying to get out of a very legitimate traffic ticket, trying to intimidate a police officer because you knew the chief of police. You're on video talking to a Hispanic tennis player, telling him to go cut the grass. So there's, you know, concern about you, Martin, that you're not necessarily an even-handed, you know, how shall I put it? I mean, these things, are you racist? Are you bigot? Are you sexist? Because it was a female police officer. So let's talk about that first.
Okay.
Because I think, you know, your campaign announcement, you do address that.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead.
Because equivocation's not really my style. I've never denied, you know, incidentally, with regard to the tennis club, there was no video of me actually saying it. I admitted it.
Oh.
But to the point, that's who I am.
Okay.
The video started after the fact. That's why they started videoing me. The actual term that I used wasn't on any kind of a video, but I did say it, and it was completely inappropriate. And whether it runs to some kind of underlying latent prejudice at the time, I really can't say. I certainly was brought back down to earth with a bump after that. That was in November of 2019. And then in February of 2022, because the infamous Valentine's Day traffic stop, that turned my life upside down. And again,
That went viral.
Oh, at 30 million views, I think, just on YouTube. And I think there was a bunch of other, homage sites that put it on too. God knows how many people have seen it. And it goes to something which I hate myself, which is people attempting to use privilege, contacts, to have a different outcome for them than for everybody else. So I completely understand why people would feel the way that they do. And I've had a long time to reflect on it. I'm not about to make excuses for losing my temper, for using the kind of terms that I used. It's really happenstance that it happened to be a female officer, frankly, because I've told off plenty of men too. You know, after the fact, when I wrote an editorial in the Herald Tribune in 2022, after the video started to go viral, and when I went on Tucker Carlson a couple of weeks later, and I said, not proud of it, but I just made the point, you know, when people get caught for drink driving, it's usually not the first time. And when I get caught on a video having an outburst, absolutely wasn't the only time in my life. Mm-hmm. And I had to sit back and ask myself, what's in it for me? There's nothing. Why did I do it? Some kind of power, some kind of control, some kind of, you know, lack of self-esteem. It's hard to put your finger on it, but I had 4.5 years to reflect on it. Mm-hmm. I said to everybody that I acknowledged that it was terrible. I've watched it a few times. I can't frankly bear to watch it all the way through. And I'll never live it down. You know, 30-odd million clicks on anything means that whenever you go to Martin Hyde, that's the first thing you'll see, and it'll be like that until the day I die. Does it mean that I have to retire from public life? Does it mean that I don't have a valid opinion? Does it mean that I can't be a useful voice? I don't think so. But, again, running it opens up old wounds. It's the first thing that everybody asks me, and I understand that. So not to toot my own horn, but at least I'm standing up, acknowledging it, and recognizing that I've made a lot of mistakes, and I want to come back from that and win the trust of people, and at least try to lay the ghosts of February the 14th, 2022 behind me.
Well, thank you for that explanation. I would say we're in a time in Florida where there are a lot of really big issues that are happening in the state legislature. I can think of many reasons why someone would want to run. What motivated you to jump in? Because, you know, you've jumped in at late, right? So I take it that this wasn't something that you were planning on doing.
Actually, it was. The only reason I left it to the last minute was because I was waiting to see if a Democrat ran. Because had a Democrat not run, the whole election would have been laid wide open.
To clarify, this is the state Senate seat. It's District 22. So it's Joe Gruder's old seat. He's termed out.
Yes.
And James Buchanan is running. I called him the incumbent. That's my mistake. He's not.
No, he's not.
He's not. It's an open seat. So it's James Buchanan. You're running as an NPA.
Yes,
and then Vic Rowe. And who is the
Vic Rowe's running in the primary against James. And then Lou Wasserman is running as a Democrat in the general. So yeah, I don't have to get my hands terribly dirty until after August the 18th when the primary is complete. Assuming, and I frankly do assume that James will prevail over Vic, if for no other reason than he's got $2 million at his disposal, then that will leave a three-way race and three distinctly different choices. You know, it's a partisan
election.
So
wait a minute. So there is a Democrat. You said you were waiting.
Yes, there is. I was waiting to see if there was.
Okay.
Wasserman declared in the last week and a half or so before before the election. So essentially in the primary is Vic Rowe and James Buchanan running for the Republican nomination. And then in the general, it'll be me as a no party affiliation, Lou Wasserman as a Democrat, and the winner of Vic and James as the Republican.
So let's get back to it. Why did you decide to run?
Well, we've seen in the last couple of years, post the storms that we had in 2024, they passed a piece of legislation which called SB 180, which was in its first form meant to help rebuild. Right? The idea was that local governments wouldn't be able to get in the way of people rebuilding after the storm. Sounds innocuous, but in truth, what it meant was that they took away all local control over development and labeled developers to break the wetlands codes. And it got me to thinking, you know, the special interests we know about DC, we know and we've talked a lot about over the years what happens at local level with special interests, campaign donations and getting their preferred candidate. Tallahassee's awash with it too.
Yeah.
And to the extent that the other bill, which I take great exception to, which is Live Local, again, on its face, a reasonable thing. If you build affordable housing within a development, you get a bonus. But the bonus is double density, and the factor or the element that's affordable, and when they say affordable, I mean it's slightly less expensive.
And I want to get into all those details.
Yeah, but
for now,
Live Local, absolutely takes away, because it says, you know, things can be rezoned and local government has no control over it. Now, while I don't have tremendous confidence in our county and city commissions locally, Manatee and Sarasota, at least we can look them in the eye. Tallahassee, yeah. I drove there the other day. It's a long way. And they're going to give you 60 seconds in front of a mic and they're not going to listen. So
no.
Local control is just about at the core of it, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And the establishment, the Republican Party has a stranglehold on both houses, tremendous supermajority, which arguably is a bad thing for democracy, too. And I've
So I'm going to jump in, sure. Martin. Let's talk about why you're running as an MPA, mm-hmm. because you have been affiliated with the Republican Party for a long time. And, you know, we've seen, and you and I have talked about the dark money, mm-hmm. the PAC money. You admitted to, you know, giving to a PAC when you first ran for sure. city commission. Not too happy with me when I pointed it out. But I think, you know, it's important to have conversations with people and to collaborate with people across party lines. So it's kind of big news that you're running as an NPA, I think. And I'd like, you know, tell us what prompted you not to run within the Republican Party. Is this just a way to get on the November ballot, or do you have real issues with what's going on locally with the Republican Party?
No, I have real issues with the Republican Party of Florida and the Republican Party of Sarasota. You know, you mentioned the PAC money. You know, that was Jack Brill, the chair of the Republican Party of Sarasota.
He advised
that told
you.
Me yeah. to send a check to, I didn't know where it was going. And it was news to me, you know, when we sat there that day and you talked about a PAC and who else was involved. I was completely clueless. Now, arguably, I could and should have known, but I didn't. Since then, over the years, I've seen how it works, you know, how you climb the greasy pole, and I don't terribly care for it. When I saw what happened in 2024 with the Republican Party, where they had closed a couple of RECs, Manatee County notably. And
yeah, that was a huge,
because
huge
they kicked out two
thing.
Duly elected state committee
yeah, so
people.
Let's just make sure people understand what happened in 2024. And this was subsequent to the developer candidates
losing
big mm-hmm. in Manatee County. So the word was that there was a lot of people were angry at the state level, and they chose to unseat on Republican executive committees in Manatee and Sarasota County. They just kicked these folks off the local board. Like Lourdes Ramirez was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And they had been elected by Republican precinct captains, I think. Is that how it works?
No, they were elected on the ballot. They had thousands and thousands of votes. These are state committee men and women.
I thought it was the local executive committees that happened too.
They did that in Sarasota, but
yeah.
in Manatee, they closed the whole REC and then appointed uh-huh. a whole board from Tallahassee to open up a new one.
Yeah.
Sure.
I just want to tie this in, kind of a theme. Because I look at this Live Local Act, I look at what's going on with property taxes, the history of what's gone on with the DeSantis administration, SB 180. There is a much bigger agenda to centralize power and to disempower local government. And to disempower the local Republican parties.
But it's exactly right. You remember Ben Franklin at the Constitutional Convention coming out and asking what we'd got, and he said, it's a republic if you can keep it. One of the major fears that the Founding Fathers had, which was, you know, profound, really, was that we would slip back into some kind of duopoly of power between red and blue, or some partisan politics, and that representation of the people would disappear. And
that was George Washington warning against unscrupulous men.
But wasn't he right? I mean, you know, 250
yeah.
years ago nearly, and now we got Jack Brill and Evan Power as the chair of the Republican Party of Florida. So to the point of, you know, Groucho Marx said, he wouldn't join any club that would have him as a member. And as far as the Republican Party is concerned, it's not a question of whether I'm a conservative or not. I'm simply not prepared to be a part of a party that sold its soul to special interests, and that doesn't take any account of citizens' needs. We know locally that the vast majority of citizens, whether they're Democrats, Republicans, or MPAs, are against this massive growth in development. And yet, every year, they go and they pass more and more legislation, taking away power, devolving it to Tallahassee. And I couldn't, in good conscience, run as a Republican. I haven't been a Republican for more than 3 years.
But I think that's news to most people.
Well, sure, yeah. I didn't need to advertise it.
No,
I did it way before any election. Yeah. I did it squarely and simply because I didn't want to tie myself to a group with whom I have profound differences. And that's not necessarily on every single policy issue, but it's on the way that they run things. And, call me old-fashioned and naive, but I like the idea of one person, one vote. And we've gone a long way away from that. So no party affiliation doesn't mean that I've become more liberal or less conservative. It means that I don't believe in the red or blue team anymore.
Okay. All right. So I think the biggest headline grabbing and arguably maybe not the biggest, but one of the biggest issues is what's going on with the state legislature and property taxes. Mm-hmm. And we are going to the state legislature passed, an amendment to go on the ballot. They passed the bill to put the amendment on the ballot, which is puts it to the voters about property tax reform. And what is it specifically? It would raise the homestead exemption from $50,000 to ultimately $250,000. There's a step. I think in 2027, it's like $200,000.
150.
Or 150, excuse me. And then in 2028, it's 250.
Mm-hmm.
So this would really kind of knock the legs out from under local government in terms of how budgets are structured, because the cost of local services is still going to be there. The cost of maintaining roads, the cost of police, the cost of fire protection. And on the face of it, to voters, it might sound like, woohoo, I want a reduction in my property taxes. It's also a regressive reduction in property taxes because there are a lot of people who aren't paying at that level. You know, maybe they've got, an exemption because they're a veteran or because they're disabled. Maybe they've been homesteaded for a long time, and so they're at that lower level. So they're not going to get the benefit of this full $250,000 reduction. But however those costs are passed on, whether it's utility fees or sales tax, they will pay that, you know. So the people at the lower end, the people at the higher end, I mean, okay, $200,000 off my assessed value, that's if you've got well more than $250,000 in value, that's a tax break. I don't know if voters, I think actually, I have faith that Florida voters are going to get under the hood on this and really see, but it looks so tempting. But what it could do to local government in terms of spending for those services, legitimate cause is just a big question mark. And it seems to me like Tallahassee, there's an agenda again to kneecap local government and to centralize power with the state. What do you, what's your take on it? What do you think the legislature should be doing? Because it's almost like an unfunded mandate. We're going to take away your ability to tax, and you have to figure it out. We're going to create a crisis for you, and you have to figure it out. What do you think?
Well, there are a number of factors. First of all, like all of these things, it's being packaged up as something that it isn't, because the school taxes, which is close to half of the taxable value on your, or not taxable value, but the taxes are exempt. So yeah. The idea that it'll be no property taxes, simply not true.
Can I just interject, and we'll get back to this later, but if there's a plan afoot to privatize schools, then there's an agenda in place. No, we want your school money because that's going to go to this privatization effort. So I found it interesting that school taxes were exempt.
Coming to the narrative, in one sense, you're absolutely right. You're jumping out of the frying pan into the fire. The idea, and this is what it was about, local control.
Yeah.
I can go to the county, I can go to the city, I can go to the various municipalities, and I can protest any decision that they make. Going to Tallahassee, a five-hour drive, 60 seconds in front of somebody that's not listening, not so likely to have much of an impact when we have 67 counties. So it would be a bad thing. Generally speaking, I'm not in favor of expanding to bigger government, because bigger government hears less well. So that's number one. Yes, in terms of devolving power locally to state, I'm against that. As far as the nuances of the proposal, 150,000 from 50,000, we haven't kept pace with property values. We've increased property taxes year on year for many years. And not increased people's homestead exemption. So to a limited extent, they've increased the tax net, and captured more people because of that. Why are people upset? People are upset because it's linked to the cost of living. The government, Sarasota County just opened a new administration building, fancy this, fancy that, gyms for people, terrazzo floors and so on and so forth, while people are worried about putting gas in their car. Mm-hmm. That's the conflict. It's to a limited extent about a spending issue. All of the local governments have increased their budgets by more than double over the last 7 years, and people's incomes simply haven't kept pace. So that's why it's a hot potato. It's why DeSantis is using it.
Can you go back over that? You're saying local governments have increased their budgets?
Double. In 7 years. Yeah, in the last 7 years. City of Sarasota.
Where do you get that data?
Well, Sarasota passed its first county, passed its first $1 billion budget in 2018. Uh-huh. And they passed its first $2 billion budget in 2023. Last year, it was $2.4 billion. Now, about $300 million of that was federal money.
I thought that it was a billion-dollar budget way before 2018.
A billion, yeah. But it's over $2 billion now.
Okay.
It's more than double what it was. Mm-hmm. Property values don't necessarily reflect people's ability to put their hand in their pocket, because the house that you bought 30 years ago is notionally worth three times what you paid for it. Doesn't mean that you have three times as much money to pay taxes. It's an odd mechanism. I've looked at other mechanisms, so-called poll taxes, where every citizen pays a little bit, and that presents problems in the sense that it's regressive and perhaps not terribly fair. I think increasing the homestead gradually, and making some kind of restriction or legislation for municipalities generally about the scale or the scope at which they can increase their expenditure, would be a better compromise. The truth is, people aren't going to save. This idea, well, I paid $7,000 last year, DeSantis is promising no property taxes, is simply not the case. When you kick the tires of this, for most people, it would be a few hundred dollars a year. And not to demean a few hundred dollars a year, but it will be replaced in part by fees, which are regressive, as you said. The guy that's making $500 a week pays the same as the guy who's making $5 million a year. But then there's the other part of it, which is that the people are at their tipping point. People are struggling. Healthcare, we know, has gone up tremendously. Insurance, we know, in Florida is out of control. And so people are looking for relief. And I think to a certain extent, DeSantis is looking to go out and say, I gave the biggest tax cut in Florida history. It's not true. And yeah, I don't think it'll pass. They didn't pass medical marijuana, which, you know, one might have thought was a slam dunk. 60% is a high threshold. And I'm not absolutely convinced. Of course, a lot of people will vote on the headline and will vote on the basis that they'll save money. I think they'll come unstuck. I think they're wrong. I think these taxes will come in other forms, in other fees.
Okay. So let me just say, I've done a little bit of checking here. This comports with what I recall. In 2014 was the first year that I remember the budget being $1 billion in Sarasota County. So it wasn't 2018. And, you know, we can agree to, you know, look at that a little closer. But I want to talk about this. I'm going to call it a shtick. It's a talking point. It's a marketing point. And it's been a marketing point for the Florida Republican Party and the Republican Party in general, honestly, since Reagan. But it's morphed here. And I'm not saying it's always wrong, but they apply it to everything. So Florida, I'm quoting from a CBS News article, Florida Chief Financial Officer Blaise Ingoglia argues that tax relief is necessary to curb government growth. Quote, local government is growing faster than your ability to pay for it, Ingoglia recently said. He attributed the need for the amendment to what he described as overtaxation and reckless spending in counties across the state. Local government will not, quote, local government will not stop growing, will not stop spending recklessly unless acted upon by an outside force, unquote, he said. Now, my problem with this characterization is local government is where we have the most ability to really engage in oversight. And for the most part, not always, people do. I have seen people looking closely at local government. It's harder to hide pork in a local government budget. I know people like you who will get up there and say, hey, wait a minute, what are you doing spending on this? So when Blaise Ingoglia says something like this, I'm like, there they go again, trying to demonize every form of government, no matter what it is, without any examples. He gave no actual evidence of what he was talking about. And this is where the services really make a difference in people's life. So anyway, thoughts?
Well, I mean, Blaise, bless his heart, has, you know, formed that doge and went and did a few selective audits in Manatee County. I think he suggested that they had overtaxed, overspent by $100 and some million.
And wasn't that kind of, it was seen as retaliation?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
For so the voters kicking out the developer candidates.
Just the other week, I was asked if I wanted to go to a press conference because he was going to doge Sarasota County. And, but guess what?
And Sarasota County, Tom Knight was not the developer candidate. You know, Sarasota County, Neil Rainford didn't win. Sure. So,
but they changed their mind. The point is that it's very selective. 67 counties. They did around about 10. Most of them were Democrat counties, with the exception of Manatee. And the Manatee thing was retaliatory. Mm-hmm. As far as the spending is concerned, most of the spending outside of the capital investment projects is staff. And it's that logically to me, having run organizations, should follow volume of need of business. Now, yes, we know that Sarasota and Manatee County have grown by double over the last 25 years. So it's reasonable to assume that we would need double the people, double the services. City of Sarasota, by comparison, has a lot of through traffic, but the population's been static for many, many years. It's still only around about 58,000 people.
Since I lived in the city, its population has been flat.
Yeah, and they always talk about Sarasota growing.
23 years.
And there is more traffic because, you know, there are more people to the north and the south of us.
Coming in
that come in and go out through the day. I've been given various estimates that during season, there's somewhere between 100 and 150,000 people in the city of Sarasota, but they all go somewhere else at night.
At night.
So it's a slightly different issue for them because of the kind of capital city, if not the largest city in the county. As far as Inoglia's little audits and Doge, it's just grandstanding. It's terribly easy to pull this and pull that. Now, you know, as because I've been doing it for 10 years, I typically go down to the city commission, to the county commission, to Manatee and various places, and pick holes in their consent agenda, various items that I suggest that they could get done for less or perhaps more competitively bid and so forth. You know, by way of example, 8 of the last 10 fire stations in Sarasota County were built by the same company. That same company is owned by a guy who's the chair of the county planning board now.
Who's that?
John LaCivita.
Really?
Yes. But then Jonathan Swift, who built a lot of the roundabouts and other stuff, he's the vice chair. The executive from there is the vice chair. It's the kind of thing that, you know, it's the appearance of propriety. There's none. When you see who's involved in these rubber stamps, suggesting there's any impropriety about the fire stations, but, you know, it's a pretty rectangular building. Why would 8 of the last 10 be built by Willis Smith, which is the company that he owns? The product might be excellent. Seems to me they also build a lot of the school buildings. But it seems to me that it's very obvious that we have a good old boys club. It seems to me that it, you know, proverbially, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And that's a deeper part of the problem. And that's back to your original point, why we need to keep it more local, because at least I know where the bodies are buried locally. 67 counties and at state level, how could I possibly know?
They don't know. They can't know. So if I see this as a bit of a bait and switch because we've got a homeowner's insurance crisis in Florida. And let me just go to some information on homeowner's insurance. Our premiums have gone up substantially in, you know, since, well, prior to 2024. And I'm going to have to try to find this now, which, well, it's not at my fingertips. Apologies for that. Getting a break on your property taxes when your homeowner's insurance is 3 or 4 times the national average. You know, I don't know that voters are really looking at that and how that is much, you know, for most people, that's a huge burden that has come up in the past 5-10 years. It's driven people out of the state. And then you've got the fact that the legislature has passed legislation to protect insurance companies from appeals of denied claims. I mean, the law now is so lopsided in favor of the insurance company. Joe Gruters was quoted a few years back because there were, you know, insurance companies were leaving the state. They had just passed this very favorable legislation for insurance companies. And he was suggesting that state legislatures, legislators should, in the off season, start insurance companies. And I'm like, well, you just set the table.
Well, wasn't he involved with one of them? Wasn't that the basis or the background of it? But insurance, you know, this goes back. We had a crisis going back to 2005 and Charlie or whatever else. I mean, Citizens Insurance, obviously, it was a risky venture. The whole point about insurance is you can't get out more than you put in. And by definition, it goes back to the days of the Babylonians and the deeds of Merabi, and people sending their legacies off in ships. And in London, Lloyd's of London was a coffee shop that was set up so that when people moved from the port of London, if they lost everything, each person took a little share of the risk. Florida is a coastal state. I mean, we have significant risk.
It only works. Insurance only works if the bad thing doesn't happen very often.
Sure.
That's how it works. So fire insurance, you know, there's not that many fires. accidents, you know, it's not likely you're going to get in a car accident. But to your point, hurricanes are going to happen.
And they are. We hear about the 100-year storms and so forth, and it seems like they're a little more frequent than that these days.
Four of them in 2024.
And we're more built up than we were.
Yeah.
And we have a legacy of older homes that don't fit to modern standards as far as that's concerned.
Yeah.
I had a place on Siesta for years. One of the reasons that I sold it was that the wind and flood, because you know, we're only a few feet from the bay, was $40,000 a year. So if someone gives you the house, it's no good. You can't afford to pay the insurance.
Right.
And the insurance, you know, the state Senate elect Jim Boyd there from Manatee County, who is unopposed, so is likely to be involved in that legislation in the next session, is an insurance agent. Now, it stands to reason turkeys don't vote for Thanksgiving. I often say that. And when it comes down to it, a tremendous amount of lobby money at national, certainly at state level, comes from financial services, insurance, and so on and so forth. And this legislation to change the way that people can litigate tort reform is almost without exception in favor of businesses.
Yeah.
It is unaffordable. When you're looking at premiums, you know, people talk about property tax and, you know, we're talking about $250,000 potentially as an exemption. It's being maybe $4,000 a year would be your total tax. You might save a couple of thousand a year. Most people's insurance premiums are going to exceed that by some distance.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's really talking about
not.
That.
Yeah.
And so you're literally taking it out of one pocket and putting it into somebody else's.
And distracting.
Of course. It's very distracting.
Shouldn't we have a state legislature that, you know, deals with reality? And, you know, before the show, you and I were talking about, you know, the problem we have in government up and down the line. And it's been, like, part of my mission is to help people see this locally, is that to the extent you have a bought government, they are not working for you. And what's gone on with Citizens United, with dark money, with political PACs, is that it's much more insidious at a local level that we've got these folks that, you know, I call them bought in terms of just the amounts of money. You know, in the Rainford Tom Knight race, there was at least $3 million spent on when you total up both sides for a county commission race,
mm-hmm.
you know. And what's the payoff? Well, for a developer that, you know, the major developers, Pat Neal, Rex Jensen, which is Schrader Manatee Ranch or Lakewood Ranch, Carlos Baruff, Medallion Homes, these are prolific donors.
Mm-hmm.
And Randy Benderson is the shopping center donor. So these are prolific donors. What they get in return in terms of infrastructure payment, in terms of, you know, potential impact fee abatement or release is well worth the money that they put into a race. But until people see it,
yes.
And it's at the state
Citizens
too.
Citizens United is obviously, you know, it's a terrible thing. You can control the county commission in Manatee or in Sarasota for about $1 million over a 4-year cycle because the grassroots candidates always come up against, once they've run out of family and friends to ask for money from, most of them can't raise more than $20,000 or $30,000, which is barely enough to send out the odd mailer. Whereas you'll find a candidate turning up from nowhere with $50,000 on day one, and as you said, with the political action committees and so forth, an untold, unlimited amount of money to spend if things get tight. To a certain extent, the reason they spend disproportionate amounts of money on certain races is to send a message. And the message is,
don't bother.
Don't bother.
Yeah.
You can't win.
Yeah.
And you know,
and we will try to ruin you if you do get in there.
And let me say, that's exactly it. You know, people, you know, reasonably have questions about my character and conduct, but it takes a big pair of shoulders to stand up and say, let me say straight up, I stuck $150,000 into my own campaign. I don't suppose I'll see a quarter of that in donations.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because the donations, the big donations, I won't ask people to spend money that they don't have or give money that isn't discretionary, or to follow a pipe dream. You know, what's, you know, on some level, what's the point of giving money to a campaign that can't win? Now, as it happens, we have a statistical chance to win.
You know, the thing about it is, though, you've got to start somewhere.
Yes.
And if people are going to take their county back, which is literally what Manatee County, you know, they talked about.
They did, but they're about to lose it again.
Well, it takes a sustained effort over time. It takes a group effort. It takes a village. It can't just be the same handful of people all the time. But you can do it. Mm-hmm. If you're out there talking, and
they did it in 2024, but the backlash is real. You know, the re-election, Carol Feltz, of course, sadly passed away in District 1, so that made it. There's four seats up, four. Ballard was a developer candidate. She's likely to win re-election. Ron, absolutely a developer candidate, likely to win re-election. At large, you've got Tara Poulton, who's, nobody knows who she is except she worked within the establishment, within Vern Buchanan's office, is suddenly the front runner for an at-large seat. That leaves the District 1 seat as an outlier. That county commission that had a real chance of pushing back is much more likely than not to go 5-2 against. And that's why people lose heart. And it's our job, your job, absolutely every week, mine to a lesser or a limited extent, to encourage people that it can be done.
Yeah, it can be done.
And it's a fight worth having, because otherwise, you know, the old phrase, you get the government you deserve.
Right.
If you sit by, they can't actually buy your vote. They can't buy your neighbor's vote. They can buy the candidates. They can send out the mailers. But there's a very simple principle. If somebody's taking money from special interests, don't vote for them, period.
It's amazing how these folks keep getting elected. You know, and
it's low information,
Kathy.
It's low information.
Yeah. So I'm going to switch gears a bit here. Alligator Alcatraz. You know, it's one thing to want, and I think actually we need a, you know, secure border. I don't think people argue about that. We need humane. I mean, we were founded on the notion that all men are created equal. That doesn't, you don't qualify that with are you a citizen or not in terms of how you treat a human being. And what's going on, and I don't like the term, you know, alligator Alcatraz kind of trivializes horrible human rights abuses. You know, detainees don't get to see their lawyer. Their families don't know where they are. These are, some of them are citizens who actually are of, you know, Latin, Hispanic ethnicity, but they're citizens. People with legitimate green cards going to a hearing and then being deported. Well, that's getting into something else, but you know, as a Floridian, I find it unconscionable that this place was given a cartoon type name, that human beings are going there. I mean, we were founded on the rule of law. What's happened to us? And to your point about, you know, you started out in the beginning, human failings, and you have yours. We all have our human failings. But my God, what's going on in this state in our name to injure people who, by the way, someone's hiring, someone's paying them, you know, our economy. I find it so interesting that certain arenas of the economy aren't touched. I mean, I never see a raid at a construction site. Well, what's like now? Wouldn't those big donors get upset if their workers were suddenly detained? And we don't see that. But what we see are landscape people, you know, I've heard reports from citizens of ICE agents hanging out at Wawa or 7-Eleven for landscape crews so they can grab those people, like who are just working in a sector that's not protected the way construction is. So, you know, as a state legislator, if you were to win, and what do you think about that? What would you do about it?
There are a number of things there. First of all, it was an egregious and shocking, massive waste of money. I understand that, you know, there's a little bit of theater to everything, but to spend billions of dollars with no particular sense of what the purpose was, other than a headline, we're going to take these people and we're going to put them in the middle of the Everglades. There is absolutely some merit to the rule of law. There's a very easy way. You made the point. That's absolutely right. And the developers would like it if they came and started taking people off their building sites. There's a real simple way, and we just don't use it to the extent that we should. E-verify. And finding the people that, are fueling it by employing people without documents. And to an certain extent, the reason they do that is because it's cheaper.
But the whole economy since the inception of this country was the inception of the country was free labor through slavery.
Okay. Sure.
And we've always, the United States has always had the cheap labor class. And we want to pretend like, you know, it's not structurally built in. The Chamber of Commerce has opposed all this stuff. You know, why? Because these folks, they come and they work. Mm-hmm. And they want to work. So, you know, to demonize them the way the administration nationally has, but the way that Florida, you know, DeSantis has, to me, it's just like, can we look in the mirror and see how we have structured our economy and go from there? So anyway, you can tell I'm over this, and I think it's just egregious that our tax money as Floridians is being used in, you know, like this concentration camp detention camp.
All those billions of dollars spent on alligator Alcatraz and coming away from borders and immigration could be better spent. You know, I look at the people that are genuinely struggling. It sounds like a platitude, but I know people. I hear people. People often come to me and say,
"Yeah,
I can't pay my rent. I can't pay my car insurance. My cell phone's been cut off. My electricity, my water." That's really where people, obviously it's a cliche, but a hand up as opposed to a handout, helping people out of their circumstances, getting people back on their feet for however many billions were spent on alligator Alcatraz. One wonders how many, I use the term loosely, single mums with kids mm-hmm. could have been housed better, how many additional people could have got health care, dental care, and so on and so forth.
With that money.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so
with that
It's just a bad decision. It might resonate with a base and might, you know, the sort of rage bait thing where these people did something wrong, therefore we're going to punish them. But it doesn't really change anything. It's the same as giving someone life without parole. That's a tax on every citizen.
But
it doesn't make any sense.
But, you know, when you're bringing people in without due process and you're actually detaining citizens because they have a certain ethnicity. At some point, like, if you want to think of the good karma that the United States has accumulated over the years because we do help other countries, because we have given charity, because we treat people right, and it's not been perfect ever. But now there's this acceptance of something that is so clearly without due process, without, like, if you can't even see your lawyer, if your family doesn't know where you are, what does that say about us? And that's, you know, I look at the DeSantis administration and what's gone on in the state legislature, to your point, you know, one party rule is not good for democracy. And so they've gone so far off in a negative direction. And basically, it sounds like what you're telling me is that you would not support that. Is
no,
that right?
I wouldn't support it. I, you know, we have a balanced budget. We have a surplus, in a sense. I'd like to see whatever it is that we have either returned to people in the form of lower taxes. Or
no, I'm talking about Alcatraz.
No, I understand. I understand what you're saying. What I'm saying is that
in the Everglades.
If whatever money we do have to spend need not be spent on something that deflects away from people's internal anger, which is what the whole border thing is. It's about saying, well, yes, you haven't got much, but guess what? We're making it worse for somebody else.
Yeah, so tell me about that, Martin, because, you know, I grew up in New York. Trump, honestly, for me, I've had family members who dealt with him, friends who dealt, and it's like known the guy is like a buffoon criminal. I'm sorry. That's how I've seen him. And I understand he's talented in the terms of communication, skills, and, you know, garnering attention. He's masterful at that. He's a salesman, not the good kind, I would say, but, you know, he can sell. Mm-hmm. He definitely can sell. And you've touched on this internal anger that people have. So what is it? Because I know I have my own theory. I think there are very good reasons for people to be upset in this country. And Donald Trump tapped into that and he channeled it and they supported him. How do you see the MAGA, you know, disaffection or anger with the country? And how can people come together and understand that and move forward productively rather than, you know, finger pointing and name calling?
Well, there's nothing wrong with trying to make a country great again. That said, it presumes that we were ever great. And you know, the American dream, if we're honest, is an illusion. You know, you go to school for 12, 16 years, you come out, you get a mortgage, you have student debt, you work until you almost drop to own a piece of property, and then you die. The pursuit of happiness is it really a dream? You know, I said this to my kids in recent times. They talk about what they don't have. I said, but what do you have? You have your youth. You have your whole life ahead of you.
You have each other.
Do something that you love. Don't do something because it makes more money, because money you can't take with you and doesn't make you happier. Old saying, contentment before riches. What we're tapping into politically in this country on both sides is people's discontent. And while it sounds, you know, a little whimsical, we've got a lot of problems. You know, we've got a lot of injustice. We've got problems with our education system, early childhood intervention for literacy. We've got disparity there as far as, you know, most Americans don't have very much. Was it still 40% of people don't have $1,000? And it's easy to throw that out. But when you think about that, that's hundreds of millions of people.
Yeah.
They're not living the American dream. They're living from hand to mouth. Now, can you fix that in one legislative session? Absolutely not. I'd like to think is that we could stop with catering to the special interest, to the donor class, to the wealthiest, to the loudest, and include as many people as want to do the right thing together. Pollyanna, maybe.
No, I think I'm glad to hear that. I think that MAGA voters understand that their government has not worked for them. And they're right. The problem is the people who have been most throwing them under the bus are part of the same system that undermines them the most. That the restructuring of this economy since the late 70s, early 80s, you know, post-World War II, we had the largest expansion of the middle class in the United States. Our economy was just booming. And there were structural structures in place to make that happen. And then they were systematically removed, dissolved to favor the wealthy. And the Republican Party has a big track record in doing this. I mean, Hoover culminated with, you know, the crash. So I look at this and go, these folks are taking advantage of you right in front of your face. Homeowners insurance in Florida is a great example. How the, you know, the privatization agenda with public schools, corporate charters, who's behind that, you know, Richard Corcoran's salary, looking at what's going on with all of these former state legislators now becoming presidents of Florida colleges, the corruption is there. And I'm not saying that the other party has clean hands. They do not. I mean, you know, Clinton dismantled a lot of social safety net programs too. But boy, until voters realize you better start voting your interests instead of the guy with the best sales pitch, we're going to still have trouble. So I'll give you the last.
No, I agree. Look, people should vote with their interests. My dad always said self-interest is people's only interest, and rightly so. People should vote with their interests. You know, you talk about cronyism. I see that they were talking about making Perez, the Speaker of the House, ambassador to Brazil. Paola, like you wouldn't believe. These things happen in plain sight. Most people wouldn't pick Perez out of a lineup if he was standing in front of them, but he has a massive impact on their lives. These people in the state house and the state senate pass legislation almost every day. I mean, it's 6 inches, it's a foot high by the end of a session, and most people wouldn't have any idea, except that most of it doesn't give any advantage to your average Floridian, whether it's encouraging people to concrete over more of the ground, or whether it is finding a way to stop you suing somebody who's done you wrong, or whether it's a way to protect classes.
Companies?
You look at Mike Moran, the tax collector, and then you read the legislation and you see that he was legally entitled to take commission on money that he collected. That makes no sense.
Well,
if I'm a tax collector, why do I get a slice of the money? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and it was something that hadn't been done for, you know, for more than 2 decades.
It's in the legislation.
Well,
someone wrote that.
Yeah, yeah. So we just have a few minutes left. Do you have a website where people can find out more about your campaign?
Yeah, it's hideforsenate.com. As far as, you know, my campaign is concerned, you know, we're going to be limited to the basic strokes. We have a fairly decent social media presence, on Facebook just under my name, Martin Hyde. I'll continue to go to the various municipal bodies and talk about the things that matter to people locally. Although this is a state senate seat, it's to represent the people of Sarasota and the southern quarter of Manatee County. So really, we're just taking our local game and going up there and making sure that we have a voice. And that's the theory. Now, nearly 30% of the voters in that area are NPA. So this idea that the Republicans absolutely guaranteed to win, not necessarily the case.
So you are an MPA.
I am.
And we will see.
And we will see.
How that works. Thank you so much for joining me, everybody. You've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. West Coast Black Theater Troupe will host their Juneteenth Arts Festival, a two-day celebration of Black artistry, culture, and history, and community on Friday, June 19th, that's tomorrow, and Saturday, June 20th. West Coast Black Theater Troupe is located at 1012 North Orange Avenue in Sarasota. The event is open to the public, but registration is recommended. To register and for more information, go to westcoastblacktheatertroupe.org. They're going to have an art gallery, live music, dance, film, student performances, workshops. It should be great. You've been listening to The Detail on WSLR. Stay tuned for more public affairs programming. Make it a great day.